to Discover Health, where we help you take control of your health so you can transform your life. Your host, functional medicine expert, Dr. Trish Murray, is on a mission to help every baby boomer age with dignity and grace.
So welcome, everyone, to this podcast. Today, I'll be interviewing J.A. Plosker. Hi, J.A. How are you today?
How are you? I'm good.
Good. I'm doing great. So what I like to do, J.A., is I'm going to read your bio for folks, and then we're going to kind of get into breaking this down and having a bit of a conversation.
Good.
So J.A. Plosker has had careers as a social work counselor, attorney, and college instructor who has taught courses in comparative religion, ethics, and social work. His own deeply personal search for meaning and fulfillment led him to the study of ancient wisdom and a mission to inspire others to find extraordinary power in everyday life. He published the multi-award-winning book, The Nobody Bible, Uncovering the Simple Wisdom in Ordinary Life. He hosts the Nobody Guide to Life podcast and YouTube video series and speaks on mindfulness and the power of ancient wisdom in everyday life. And I was honored I was on J.A.'s podcast about, maybe 6 months ago or so, J.A., something like
that. Yeah, it was a great interview.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time until I was like, oh my goodness, I need to interview you on my podcast because you're... All of your ideas fit so well with what I'm trying to do with Discover Health and help people find their most optimal place in their daily life. So one of the first questions I would like to ask after reading your bio is, what is the study of ancient wisdom and how is it powerful in everyday life?
Well, I spent a lot of time in college and on my own studying world religion and philosophy. And when I started going through a really rough time, you know, in my late 20s and early 30s, I was really struggling. And I found myself, you know, looking for answers like everyone else, you know, at some point we all look for answers. And I went back to those books that I had used to, you know, learn and teach world religion to my students. And I started looking through all of that ancient wisdom. And I realized that a lot of the things that the ancients passed down to us and were talking about ways to live a better life, a more fulfilling life, were actually things that I was doing right in my everyday life. So, you know, if we just pick any one of the 10 commandments and work on one of them, that's a really powerful tool for personal and spiritual growth. Or if we read about the mysteries of karma, and then we go out in our day and think about how we're speaking to people or treating people, that can also be a really powerful tool. So I learned that a lot of the things that I was doing right in my everyday life, just simple things I was doing, actually were building a bridge back to this ancient wisdom. And I found that it was not only really relevant to my life today, but it was actually transforming it. So it was a really interesting search and it really helped me and it was a lot of fun too.
Yeah. So that was back in your 20s, you were saying?
Yeah, my late 20s, early 30s. I was really struggling. I was trying to, you know, make something of myself. And, you know, I just graduated professional school and was thinking about how I was going to be somebody. And then I realized that maybe the purpose of life wasn't to actually strive to be somebody. Maybe it was actually to turn the whole idea on its ear and become nobody. Now, that doesn't mean nothing. It doesn't mean I cease to exist. What it means is I stop taking up so much space. You know, you learn to maybe tame your ego a little bit or hold space during a conversation instead of filling it or clear out some of your possessions instead of collecting things. You basically start to strip away layers of yourself until you really get to the core of who you are. And I found that even though we're quote unquote nobody, we have this amazing access right in everyday life to these unbelievably powerful tools for personal and spiritual growth. So it's really that nobody concept really has transformed my life.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, as it says in your bio, you've studied in obviously college to be a social work counselor, and you've been trained as an attorney as well. Have you
Right.
worked as a lawyer before?
Yeah, I worked as a lawyer briefly. When I graduated law school, I found some jobs. I was always a much better writer than anything else. So I found a lot of jobs writing for attorneys. But really what that turned into is that legal background actually got me to, I married that legal background with my religious studies master's degree, and I actually started teaching healthcare ethics, bioethics, and philosophy and things like that. So really that law degree turned into a love of teaching. And so I didn't practice for that long. I turned my attention to teaching and then later became a social work counselor.
That's neat, because I actually started my career out as a high school teacher and then moved into medicine after that. So,
Right.
and once you've been a teacher and you enjoy it and you see the benefit of it and the service it can be to others, it's really, helps you. And it's really neat to say that, like you say, you were looking at ancient wisdom. And so how has that ancient wisdom actually helped you in your life?
Well,
Can you give us some examples?
right. It's interesting because every time, when I was really struggling, when I was struggling with depression, when I was struggling with anxiety, and you get up in the morning and the events of a day seem overwhelming. They seem like something that you have to slog through or get through until, fate or something smiles on you. And when I started to apply these techniques of ancient wisdom, what I found was over the days, months, and years as I was practicing these, I noticed that the events of my day were actually opportunities to practice. So like I said before, this if I had an opportunity to get angry, somebody cuts me off in traffic, or I had an opportunity to maybe get revenge on somebody, that's something that comes up for us sometimes. We have that opportunity to get even. I would start to think about, like I said, karma. And I would start to think about this very simple tool from ancient wisdom and how it could affect my life. And I would apply it right in the moment. Or, I think in chapter, I think it's 78 of the Tao Te Ching, it says, nothing is more soft and yielding as water. But for attacking things that are solid and strong, nothing is better. So when I was confronted with a fight or a potential fight, sometimes I would yield in that moment to change the energy. And I found that instead of having a day that was filled with angst and worry and anxiety, that by applying these simple ancient tools right in the moment, who I thought I was actually disappeared. And I became more peaceful, more mindfulness was actually one of the big tools that I came across and started applying. And that really undergirds it all. Why? Because I started to actually pay attention to and participate in my life instead of trying to avoid it. And once I did that, I started to discover that not only were things not as bad as I thought, but they were actually such powerful instruments for change. And everything just, over the years, everything's just changed for me. I still struggle with anxiety. I still have stress. I'm human, but the way I filter it, the lenses through which I see it are different.
Talk about these two things. First of all, let's talk about karma. There's a lot of people out there, even myself, it's like, well, what does that mean? We've heard that word, and I have a sense in my being of what I think it might mean, but what do the ancients say about that? What is it? And what does it
Well,
mean?
look, there's probably as many different ways of interpreting that concept as there are ever people who have believed in it. And so for me, the way I've used it, the way I've distilled that concept is the idea that my actions reverberate. It's like banging a gong through the universe. So if I take an action, or maybe not take an action, right? Maybe stay silent when I'm or still when I'm supposed to act. That has consequences. It has reverberations. It has vibrations across, some would say across lifetimes. So when you use that as a tool in your daily life, it serves as a stop. So before you you know, make a hand gesture in traffic, or before you say something mean, you stop and apply that concept and think, is what I'm about to say or do worth the potential repercussions, reverberations throughout my life, maybe throughout lifetimes? So that's how I've distilled that concept in everyday life and used it as a tool for myself.
Cool. Now, how about the other concept you've brought up is mindfulness?
Right.
Again, that's another term that we can all say, well, what exactly does that mean?
Right.
What does that mean? And how do we apply that?
Well, what does it mean? It means whatever the practitioner in that moment probably thinks it means. For me, again, as I've distilled it, it's the idea of being present. It's the idea of, instead of avoiding my life, being present for it. Instead of evaluating my life, being in my life. Instead of walking around and judging myself harshly, instead of always wishing I was somewhere else, instead of always wishing that things were other than they were, I embrace that moment as best I can and pay attention to it fully without judgment. And that's how I've distilled that concept for myself. And that's really gotten me very far on my journey of personal and spiritual growth.
So it's sort of just being conscious of observing your life and being conscious of every moment of it. Is that
well? Right. Like washing dishes is big for me. We go through a lot of dishes in our house, and I use what seem like mundane tasks. Sometimes I get excited about doing them because I've trained myself to actually look forward to everyday tasks like that, because those are golden opportunities to practice growth. So when the towels are done in the washer, or the dryer, you go in and you fold them consciously. Now that may seem, you know, to someone that may seem like such a small thing, but is it really? Because if I practice there and then I go into the kitchen and there's a pile of dishes, I could have this reaction. Ugh, there's a pile of dishes. That produces a response in me that I don't want. So instead, I embrace that task and I concentrate. Maybe I do breath work. Maybe I say a mantra or a phrase to myself while I'm washing those dishes. And you know, Trish, I find I'm a lot calmer during the day because mundane tasks really don't have the hold on me that they used to. I actually look forward to them. So that's minutes, hours of time in my day that I've actually not only gotten back, but now use for personal and spiritual growth. And it's been really powerful for me.
Mm. So many of us, you know, you have this list, if you will, of things we have to accomplish either
right.
that day or the goals for the week or the month or this right. next quarter. And it just seems like we're constantly looking at the list or thinking about the list and what needs to get done. And the mundane task, as you're describing, is just in the way.
Right.
You're getting to where you want to go on your goals or getting to that next accomplishment or that next title, or
right.
it's stopping you from getting to the next profession or the, you know, the accomplishment. And it's just like you're saying, the mindfulness concept. There's a therapist here locally and she focuses a lot on mindfulness. And one I heard her speak one time at a gathering, and she had us all take a raisin and put it in our mouths and simply be mindful of the whole process of chewing it and truly tasting it, and then just allowing that whole process to be conscious, rather than so many of us throw food, for example, in our mouths and we don't pay any attention to the fact that we maybe chew it once or twice or 20 times and then swallow it and we move on to the next bite.
Right.
And it was such a neat experience to really chew and taste and enjoy the raisin that day, that we were all there for like 5 minutes. One raisin each.
I love that. That you can actually stretch that practice into hours. I mean, that can be a whole meditation. You know, I gave a talk on mindfulness, and I was giving examples from everyday life. And, you know, I thought about the idea of making dinner. And for so many of us, cooking is just that annoyance between the end of work and the start of our shows, you know, on a streaming service. But,
yeah.
You know, I asked the audience, you know, what is the sound of black pepper when you crack it from the mill? What is the shape of olive oil when you throw it into the pan? These things have a life to them. And it's not just, I think sometimes we rebel against mindfulness because it doesn't seem like it's, air quotes, doing anything. But I can attest firsthand the constant practice of mindfulness, whether it's mindful eating, mindful cooking, mindful parenting, resetting your focus moment by moment by moment to the moment without judgment, actually helps you handle harsh stress better. Because in the times when not much is happening, that's when you practice. So when you're annoyed by doing dishes, that's the moment to tame the inner world. When you're annoyed because of your laundry, that's the moment to tame the inner world. So that when there is a crisis, you have already trained yourself to go into the calmer mind. So we still have anxiety in life. We still have stress. We still make judgments, but we dial it back. And we dial it back. And then we become the calm person in the office. Or we become, you know, the person people like to come to for advice because they know they're going to have a level head to talk to. It's tremendously powerful. And your description of that exercise is important because it can start with something as small as a raisin for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah. Now, to help folks that, let's say, are out there listening and they're like, the typical all of us, and you know, we're stuck in our list and we're stuck in our stress, and again we're in that situation where we're faced with this opportunity of growth, and they're listening to this podcast and they're saying, all right, I got the laundry to do or I got the dishes to do, but I'm really anxious about these five other things I need to be doing, or my kids are screaming and whatever it is,
right?
What do you suggest to them as the, what do they do in that moment? Like, what are the tools to use?
Well, I think, again, that depends on the person. I think some people may be more verbal, right? So some people may want to say to themselves, all right, stop, 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 stop. You know, I know there's people I know who that's their habit. So when they feel themselves getting stressed, they actually tell themselves out loud to stop, stop, stop. That's their way of pulling themselves into the moment. Some people are more cerebral. It's a thought. So when you're faced with a stressor like that, you think to yourself, stop. See, that's a good word. I'm using the word stop because that's one of the tools that, you know, I used to talk about with clients, is it's a very short word, stop. And it's a quick reminder to snap you into the moment. I know for myself, sometimes I'll go into a breathing pattern. I don't know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about 4-7-8 breathing, where you breathe in for a count of four, hold for seven, and then release for eight. There's also another variant of that 4-8 breathing. So in a moment when you're struggling with, say, a toddler, or you're sitting in traffic and your blood pressure's rising and you can feel that, which is not a good feeling, you can go into a breathing technique. So you breathe in for four, and then you let it out for a count of eight. And that can actually stop, for me at least, it's short-circuited the fight or flight response. And I've started actually practicing that all through the day, even when I'm just sitting and relaxing. And I notice that a lot of my triggers have been dialed way back. And things that used to trigger me very seriously, maybe to a 9 or 10, are now so low, some of them have even disappeared. So I think the important thing to do is to practice in moments when there isn't stress, so that when stress comes, you've trained yourself. If a stressful moment shows up and you don't feel prepared, have a word that signals your body to stop. Have a breathing technique that you can go into. So even if the toddler's pulling on your leg and pulling on your leg, you're not yelling, you're breathing. I found for me that's actually worked very well raising my child. Mm-hmm. So there are simple things you can do. If somebody's coming at you in a very angry way, sometimes what I'll do is you know how sometimes you can smile, but it's imperceptible. It's just a very light smile. I'll actually bring a sense of happiness, a smile. I'll see the person in good humor, not mean, but in good humor, and it actually puts my body at rest. And sometimes it even completely disarms the situation. So my suggestion to listeners would be to to play around with this, see what works for you. Think about the things your grandma said to you, you know, be nice, you know, those very simple things, smile at a stranger, those very simple things that we learned as children, not even from ancient wisdom, but sometimes wisdom just from the 80s or 90s at grandma's house, can go a long way to helping us when a crisis strikes.
That's awesome. Because yeah, for listeners, I'd love to make sure, I like to make sure they understand some of the science and the essence that when you breathe in, your inhalation is more of a fight or flight sympathetic nervous system, controlled action. And your exhalation is a more parasympathetic relaxation calming part of your autonomic, what's called your automatic or autonomic nervous system. So that's why when you say, J.A., breathe in for, let's say, a count of four, or many times I'll say a count of five, and then out for a longer count, whether that be seven or eight or whatever it is. But the idea is, again, the inhalation is the fight or flight, but the exhalation is the calming. So that's why you want to breathe out longer. And right. You'll notice that your whole system just kind of calms down. But I love that idea of actually saying in your head some short word like stop, because then you're sort of putting a wrench or a you know, you're turning the pattern off and right. shifting it to, and your brain's going, what? And it's right. ready for whatever tool then you're going to bring in next. So something like stop and then doing that breathing. Right. And it doesn't, it's not out loud even, it's just in your consciousness, it's in your being. So that's,
and, you know, I found that pairing the breath technique with a mantra has been very powerful. So let's say, so I say in for four, out for eight, right? So if you pick a mantra or a saying that's important to you, that's two or four syllables, there's your count. So let's say you want to be more calm. Let's say that's really a commitment you've made, right? In your everyday life, you're going to be very mindful of situations that push you out of your calm zone. So adopt the mantra, I'm calm. So when you breathe in your head, you think, I'm calm, I'm calm. There's your count of four. Then you breathe out, I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm. There's your count of eight. And what you start to find is that that affirmation actually, at least for me, I can only speak for me. What I have found is that these affirmations that I have used with this breathing technique have actually worked their way into my, it almost feels like muscle memory. Because when I feel myself getting anxious, I start the breathing pattern and I start a mantra and it becomes automatic. That in itself, in a crisis, even if you can just dial the crisis down from a 10 to a 7, you can think more clearly. I mean, we know the damaging effects of cortisol. You know, we know the importance. I mean, they've been talking a lot about, I mean, you can certainly speak to this, the importance of the vagus nerve now in social interactions. Just by doing simple breathing techniques and approaching a social crisis even in a calmer way at work or wherever you are has a massive effect. And if you can help the people around you to be calm, then it amplifies and magnifies that effect even further.
So both all the concepts coming out here, the idea of, you talked about karma before, but also to, for you to be calmer and the effect that energy has on the ones around you, that same sort of concept. It's going to reverberate into the energy system of the others around you and bring the situation down.
Right.
Because we are as emotional beings first, and we've all been in that situation where our emotions are so heightened, either, you know, in a negative way, particularly angry or frustrated, or, and we can't even think, and we say right. things or do things that when we walk away and get away from the situation, we say, I can't even believe I did that.
Right.
But the other thing you've pointed out is that if you've worked on it and set a pattern in your being to automatically, if you will, because you've trained yourself and worked on it, you can't just expect it to happen out of the blue.
Right.
But if you start working on it in your daily life, on a daily basis, in those, as you say, mundane situations, your brain and your nervous system and your consciousness and your being are going to remember that.
Right.
And it will automatically start to do things to take you down, or in a positive way, and quiet things?
You know, Trish, one of the things we have to watch out for is we've all probably, anybody who has a spiritual or personal growth practice knows that sometimes if you're talking to someone that isn't necessarily doing that, and you know, the same way you are in your life, you get hit with resistance. Someone will try and say, oh, I tried meditating once and it didn't work. Or, oh, I tried that whole mindfulness thing. It was really stupid. It didn't do anything. Okay. But no one would ever expect a quantum physicist to say, well, you know, I tried algebra once and it didn't work. And so I stopped. All these things take discipline and they take practice. You know, standing and washing my dishes does not make me any money. It does not, this is back to the nobody concept. It does not get me into the newspaper. It does not get me famous on TV. What it does is it helps me to become not me. So the me that thinks they don't like dishes, the me that thinks a task is annoying, that me steps aside. And it allows a different me to step in. And I'll let your listeners decide for themselves how they define that other me, what they think that is. But all I can tell you is by practicing these disciplines over and over, I'm not just going to say day to day, minute to minute, second to second, second to second, something happens. I struggled with math for years, and one day, in one of my classes, something clicked and I ended up doing fine in that class. But I had to practice and I got tutored and I got help and then it clicked. That's the same for spiritual and personal growth. You know, on the Nobody Guide to Life, that's why that podcast, that's why that video series exists. It's because if you, like your show, if you listen to these shows and you hear these tools and you know they're good from these guests and you practice them, these disciplines that you've heard other people practice, one day it clicks and you add it to your tool belt. That's all you can ask yourself for is practice.
Absolutely. So tell us more about the podcast.
Well, the podcast was really, you know, this love affair I have with nobody, this idea that really changed my life. I really am just like so many of, I'm the original intent of Nobody was, you know, I'm just some guy. You know, I was some guy who wrote a book, you know, and who's going to want to read this. And you don't have to be rich, famous, or ordained to connect to ancient wisdom, to connect with other powerful wisdom. So what the podcast is look, it's just me. I'm just some guy interviewing people who really have something that can help us right now. So that was my whole thing, is that even if I wasn't rich, famous, or ordained, I could be a kind person. I could go with the flow. I could practice good karma. So no matter who we are, we can take one of those episodes, we can hear the tip or tool in it, and we can practice it right now. Even if we're not at a 10-day retreat, even if we're not on the mountaintop, even if we're not in the deep, dark cave with the guru, even if we're not famous with millions of dollars to hire 10 life coaches to coach us through our careers as actors and act, we can use this right now. And these tools, if you practice them, chip away and chip away at things like resistance and ego, and they help you to discover who you really are at your core. And that's why I had to have you on my show.
Well, you know, so much of what you're talking about and doing resonates with everything that I believe in the essence of to discover one's health. One has to step back and focus on just the moment.
Right.
And the fact that the universe has our back and the universe is supporting us if we connect with it and right. realize that the universal energy is loving energy and compassionate energy. And we have to have that for ourselves as well. And there's, again, like you say, we're all going to have stress. We're all going to have anxiety. We're all going to have difficult times in our lives. But if you just learn and work every day to have the discipline to have faith and believe, and how do you build those? You've already given the examples. Start with the basic tools of breath, start with the basic tools of telling yourself to stop and realize that this moment is the moment you're in. And the dishes before you are a gift,
right?
Not a horrible thing.
Right.
And they give you the moment to just shut up and be still and let the water go on your hands and feel it.
Right.
And see how the dish goes from filthy to clean. And wow, that's transition. And these things, it's just, you know, you've studied law. I've studied medicine. You've been a teacher. I've been a teacher. I've been a personal trainer. I've been so many things in my life, but none of that makes me who I am.
No.
We've all kind of learned that over time. Because like you say, when we're younger, it's like, well, who am I going to be when I grow up?
Right, right, exactly.
And then we keep learning and we keep striving and we keep learning and we keep striving. And finally, at some point, for those of us that hopefully wake up, we say, you know, none of this matters. I've accomplished things. It's great. But it doesn't make me happy. What makes me happy is being of service.
Right.
And giving and connecting with other people and community and connecting with the universal energy and the love of the universe.
Right.
That's what makes me feel connected. That's right. What makes me feel calm.
Right. And depending on your belief systems, you know, I can't speak for any of your listeners. I can only speak for myself. But depending on your belief system, it isn't just an inert energy. And that's what you kind of have to remember as you're doing this. Oh, if I don't fight back, then I'm a doormat. If I don't call the manager over, how will the wait staff ever learn? If I don't complain, if I don't scream, if I don't cut them off, if I don't get revenge, if I don't become somebody, if I don't listen, if I don't follow, we have so many things in our head that we believe we shouldn't do, or we have a million reasons not to practice mindfulness or not to practice restraint or not to practice stepping aside. But this does do something. And I know sometimes people don't want to do these practices because they feel like they're not taking action or they feel like they're not doing something right. And I can tell you that it was when I stopped. Now, I didn't stop living. I didn't stop participating. I studied and became a licensed social work counselor. I mean, I still participated in my life. But it was because of these disciplines of stopping, yielding, stepping out of the way. You know, what makes a great teacup is that it's empty so that you can put tea in it. You know, nobody goes and buys a teacup that's already full. We have to empty out so that we can be filled. And that's the hard lesson when you're just starting or it doesn't seem to be going your way. These practices in a lot of ways empty us out. And they also empty negativity of its power. Because if someone comes at you and starts screaming at you and you're quote unquote not there, then it completely diffuses and disarms a situation. It's only when two people full of anger come together that a fight breaks out. It's very hard to have a one-person fight.
Yeah. The other thing is when, you know, we've all experienced that in life, when you're interacting with someone and they already know the answers or they already know it all.
Right.
And you realize along the way that there isn't anything you can really share with them or teach them, even
right.
if you may know something that they may not, because their cup is already full.
and that's not on you, right? That's not, I get caught up in that. And that has nothing to do with you as your being.
No.
And I, you know, we want to share that and we want to this and we want, you step back, you hold a space, right? You hold space instead of fill it. You hold a space for someone else's fullness and you allow them to express that. And then you move on your way without judgment.
Absolutely. The idea is just, that was whatever, no judgment about the interaction, just observation.
Right.
And just, that was interesting because you're being mindful, you're being conscious of the situation.
Right.
So yeah, tell us about your book, The Nobody Bible.
Right. So that was... Well, that book came out of the original genesis of that book was the Who Am I? You know, I remember walking around in bookstores thinking, you know, I have all these ideas in my head, but who'd want to read a book from me? You know, I'm nobody. And then I heard a teaching from one of the great influential teachers in my life said that being nobody is really the highest state because it means that you're a mirror, you're open, you're available. Well, that's where the light went off. I started looking into this ancient wisdom, as I told you at the beginning, and I realized that no matter who we are, right, we can connect to that ancient wisdom. So I decided to write about it. So what I do in the book is I take, you know, I have like the book of Moses, the book of Jesus, the book of Brahman, and I take these traditions and I show you how some of the teachings of these traditions, these powerful little spiritual and philosophical cores, can actually be tools that we can use right now in our everyday life. So no matter who you are, just by opening a door for someone, just by going with the flow, just by sharing a smile with someone, you're actually building a bridge to the ancients. And that can be a very powerful realization. And so that's what the Nobody Bible is dedicated to. And each chapter has, so if you, the ebook, you can download the exercises from a website, but they have interactive exercises. And at the end of the book, you actually take those exercises and create your own Nobody Bible. You have an entire book dedicated to your core beliefs. And it was really transformative for me to write that book. It really made all of this very real.
Let's see. So how would people get your book? Where would they go?
Well, they can go to japlosker.com, and everything's there. The links to the video cast, links to the podcast, links to the book. Everything is at japlosker.com. And that's the one stop for everything.
Excellent. So I always also like to ask Jay, my guest, to share one secret that you would feel is one of the major secrets that helps you in being optimally healthy.
Well, you know, that's easy. Everyday events have the power to transform life. That insight that came to me, that's, you know, that's not new to me. I didn't just invent that, but this idea that the things I encounter every day are my best opportunities for personal and spiritual growth. What that does is it reduces my anxiety. It reduces my sense of dread. It reduces my stress levels. It actually fires me up to see what the day could bring. That insight, more than anything, has probably served me best and served my health best. Because anything that can hold our cortisol levels down, anything that can reduce that, you know, that shot you get in the stomach of whatever juices that is, whatever can reduce those feelings is for me. And I think that approaching my everyday life as one big opportunity for personal and spiritual growth, that's done it more than anything else.
Awesome. Well, Jay, this has been great, and I think people have come away with some really beneficial tips on how to be mindful and so forth. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the episode and the Discover Health Functional Medicine Center, visit us on our website, discoverhealthfmc.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode and will join us again next time so you can truly live and play as long as you want.